Chapter 2 The Mystery of the Good. You probably know the gospel story of the rich young man, the tale of the man who came to Jesus the Lord with the question, "Good Master, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Before answering the question, Jesus replied, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone." When we look at the 10th book of Hermes Trismegistus, we notice that these words from the Gospel are a quotation from the Hermetic philosophy. One can state this quite certainly because the Hermetic philosophy existed thousands of years before the Christian Gospel. In the very first verse, we read, "The good is exclusively in God," or rather, "God is the good in all eternity." These words make clear straight away that for us the good is an unknowable reality, an illusion to a state we ourselves are unable to approach. If you think about this idea, you will realize that your good, what you are accustomed to calling good, has to do with something entirely different. It is a relative concept of value to the I-being for a limited period only. And you know that what you call good, someone else will sometimes find utterly bad or reprehensible. What one person prizes as the most noble is rejected by another as the most terrible. There are as many standards of good and evil as there are human beings. In general, you find good those things which strike you as pleasant or agreeable, or which are in keeping with your insight into life. The opposite you consider evil. The result is an appalling chaos, since in our field of life there are no genuinely good people, any more than the good, the only good, can be found in our life field. Dialectical criteria of good and evil provide no basis. They cannot be standards upon which a liberating philosophy can be built. In fact, a deliberate deception prevails in relation to these things. Every nation, every race, every group, every movement is established on a foundation of so-called goodness. People say, "Good is as we see it, as we do it, so follow our example." But it is senseless to say such things, and dangerous too, for those who indulge in such self-adulation will always be disillusioned and brought back to reality by the law of antitheses. No one objects to the fact that mankind tries and will go on trying to solve its problems in the best possible way. Indeed, there are countless people who are wholeheartedly willing to help it do so. However, do not expect anything essential from such efforts. Do not expect the good. What is called good in our field of existence is a deception or an error. This was already established with certainty thousands of years ago. A great deal of philosophizing has been done on the subject. For example, think of Nietzsche, who rightly considered as unrealistic the difference between the concepts of good and evil. Such philosophers as Kant too have realized that good and evil are dependent on human interpretation. What you think good is good for you, someone else may disagree with you entirely. Those who go no further than this level then will never reach a solution. How many discussions have you perhaps had, quite pointless discussions, about your often so very divergent insights into good and evil? Neither do we intend to bore you with our insights into good and evil. No, our aim is to free you from all this and to direct your attention to the one genuine good which exists in God alone. Verse 14 at the end of the 10th book speaks about man's dilemma with respect to good and evil. Thus it is with regard to human goodness and human beauty. And we can neither escape nor hate them, for the hardest thing of all is that we need them and cannot live without them. Our aim is to raise you, if possible, to the Hermetic perspective. If you consider all the fuss about goodness made by human beings in various groups the world over, if you become involved in all this turmoil, you will surely not find it in you to love it if you are a genuine seeker of truth. Certainly, in many respects, you may see in it elements of practical value. Sometimes it may also be agreeable. But if you view it in the light of Hermetic philosophy, you will immediately realize its inadequacy, its hopelessness, and it will not be possible for you to love such attempts at goodness. The same applies to love as applies to goodness. Just as the good is in God alone, so love too is only in God. Neither are found in human beings, bomb of nature. Seekers of truth, then, ought not to try to find them where they do not exist. But neither ought you to hate human goodness and human beauty, for hate burns, destroys. Love, too, is a fire. Love is an astral force which has to do with the heart. When a person who seeks love is disillusioned, he always undergoes a purification, and his hunger for the one thing necessary becomes that much purer and more urgent. But the fire of hate, which is also an astral radiation in the heart sanctuary, destroys and withers the heart. For the person who hates, nothing is left. However, there is a third attitude in which one neither expects nor seeks what is impossible. Instead, one adopts a purely objective standpoint with respect to these things, and in this way maintains a kind of neutral goodwill in which one simply accepts things as they are. That is why Hermes says, "We can neither escape nor hate human goodness and human beauty, for the hardest thing of all is that we need them and cannot live without them. For as long as you are obliged to live the life of nature, you will need that life and its attributes." That is why the advice is given neither to harbor hate on account of life in nature, nor to try to escape it. But what then? Well, if you neither love nor hate human beauty and goodness, and neither do you try to escape them, your position with respect to dialectical nature will be that of detachment. There will then be nothing that binds you to it and nothing that can hold you back. You will do your daily duty without grumbling, without sighing, without feelings of vengeance, and without rebellious actions. You are passing through the dismal life of the nature of death as the result of a law which compels you to do so. You cannot deny your birth in the nature of death. So do your duty, because that is what you have to do at this moment, and do it with your head held high, without hate, without running away, without attachment. And if, on life's paths, you meet a fellow seeker of truth, content yourself with an understanding wink. Where, then, is the seeker of truth heading? He is on his way back to the foundation of things, to the ground of all Genesis. The truth seeker is returning to the only good. Only in God is the good to be found. And he who finds God, he who gains participation in the good, is from then on no longer of this world. When you have found God, you will exist with the other brothers and sisters in the new life field, in the soul world. But remember that although man can participate in the good, he cannot be the good, as Hermes says. The good will always remain distinct from man. In that sense, no one is good, not even one. That is why we need to examine what the good is and to what extent a human being can participate in it. In addition, we will need to understand clearly what kind of living being nature-born man is in actual fact. Between the nature-born human being and the good lies a path, the path to participation in the good. Anyone who wishes to walk that path will have to begin by becoming non-attached in the sense we have described. Only when you are no longer attached to the nature in which you were born and bred, neither by love nor by hate, will you be able to travel with the soul from Bethlehem to Golgotha. Then you will walk the path to divine unity, to the only good. So let us place ourselves now as yearning travelers before the mystery of the good. Let us try to unveil this mystery.